our program is very clear. We are on BRRR. So we have done the rest yesterday, dealing with the major program, which is Department of Social Development, and then the other agency, which is a National Development Agency. Continuing from that point, today we are dealing with SASSA. SASSA is very popular. Most South Africans would like to listen to SASSA issues. Then can I give this, and I want to submit the apology of the secretary, because she has got a fractured ankle, so she could not come all these days. But the content advisor, Mama Nogenga, is here, and our researcher, Usiya. So I'll give the acting secretary of the portfolio committee the time to make apologies, so that after that we can start.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to members and members from the SASSA and our colleagues. I have an apology from Honorable Fanda Merwe. She says she's in KZN today. And an apology from Honorable Mukhosi. She's on sick leave from the from the 11th of October to the 11th of November. An apology from the Deputy Minister. She's presenting a white paper on the rights of people with disabilities in KZN. She was there yesterday and today. And an apology from the Minister. She's attending cabinet meetings in Pretoria. And extending apology from Honorable Tikok. And Honorable Mabilo, he's attending the committee, Portfolio Committee on Environment. He said he will join the meeting a bit later. Thank you.
I also want to add the apology of Honorable Soledi. She will leave us for the Portfolio Committee on Art and Culture. And yes. So these are straightforward reasons why they are not here, and I'm not going to want to put them for vote. At least we can deal with that, because honestly, there is no way they could have done otherwise. But let us then, the minister was here yesterday, and then she really did participate. I'll give this time straight to the presenter to take us through. And I think the acting DG, the court is, the body is in your court. You will deploy your delegation according to their areas of expertise. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair. Thank you very much. And good morning to all the members of the Portfolio Committee. We are here in front of you as per your invitation to come and present on SASSA's annual report for you to scrutinize how far we've gone in terms of meeting objectives. As you would see in front of you, this whole entire row that you have here, we are indeed here to make sure that we are in a position to answer and deal with whatever query or question that you have through from yourself. We have the acting CEO of SASSA, Ms. Rapasa Ramakupa. I have here on my right Mr. Zane Dango, the advisor to the minister, as well as what I would want to call a high-level delegation from SASSA, with all the executive managers being present here without any apology received. With those short words, Chair, please allow me to ask Ms. Ramakupa to present the SASSA annual report.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members of the committee.
Could please bring your mic closer. Your voice is really lower. Yes, thank you.
In presenting SASSA's performance for 2015-16, we have, right, I'm fine. I think SASSA has two programs mainly, which is the administration program and the benefits and support program. So I will start straight with the program one, which is administration. In terms of executive management, the objective is to promote good governance in the management of the agency. One, our first target was to achieve an unqualified audit outcome. This we have managed to achieve, and we have been getting this outcome since 2011, although there are a few matters of emphasis that were highlighted by the AG, which I'll talk to later in the presentation. We had a target to do 40 internal audit reviews, and out of the 40, we managed to achieve 34 of the planned target, and we could not achieve in few areas due to some, we had to do some reprioritization on some of the challenges that we identified in some areas which took longer than was expected. So this represents 85% of our achievement of the annual target. On the issue of fraud, theft, and corruption, we had a target to do 70% of all reported cases. In terms of the new cases that were reported in the financial year, we managed to achieve 83%, which is 927 out of 1,122 cases that were reported. In addition to that, we had a backlog from the previous year of 839 cases that we managed to investigate and ensure that they were cleared. And this brings the total number of cases that were investigated in 2015-2016 to 1,766. In terms of that, after doing the investigation, we further went to do some referrals to law enforcement agency, where 29 cases were referred to law enforcement agencies, and these cases involved 114 officials, 9 beneficiaries, 5 doctors, and 5 private persons, and 3 former officials of SASSA. And the combined value of the cases or the fraud that was involved was 53. It was mainly on grants, social grants fraud. On the legal services matters, the letters of demand, we plan that every time we receive letters of demand, we need to respond to them within the prescribed time frame. 93% of the letters of demand that we received were responded to within the prescribed time frame. Even the outstanding ones were responded to, but outside the prescribed time frame because we had to do further investigation and reviews. And then on the legal opinions, and we also had a target to do legal opinions within 10 days of request. We had a request of 980 legal opinions and 984, and out of 984, we did 980 legal opinions within the 10 days request. The other 4 were also done, but it was outside the 10 days, which is most of them, but I can safely confirm that the time frame did not exceed 20 days. On the contracts drafted and within 7 days of being awarded, 99.7% of the contracts that were drafted within 7 days within the organization. And because of the vastness of the organization, we had 756 cases that were drafted. And our legal services unit is very small, but we do manage to work within the required time frame. On the staff capacity building workshops on litigation, what we decided is that we need, in order to avoid many litigations, we need to ensure that staff is capacitated. So 75 staff capacity workshops were initiated in order to ensure that staff are fully informed and are able to deal with the cases or to avoid some of the legal challenges, because the pattern is starting to emerge that we are dealing with the same issues. We've also developed a dispute resolution framework, which will help and provide guidelines and processes on how to resolve disputes before they become litigation issues. On the human resource management, 95% of the funded vacant posts, which is 9,732, were filled as at end of March 2016. There were 1,768 appointments, 705 of these appointments were permanent, and there were 1,063 were contract appointments, which includes also EPWPs and interns. Critical positions were filled during this period were that of the chief financial officer and the chief information officer. So we have reduced the number of acting positions within the organization at a high level. In terms of the human resource plan, we were supposed to review the human resource plan, and the work was done on the human resource plan, focusing on the local office configuration, the beneficiary records management, because we have restructured how the beneficiary records management center needs to be done, and we also had to check the HR plan to support that. We also had to do a cleanup of the organizational structure in preparation for the new responsibilities coming in 2017, and we've also had to address the issues of the trends in human capital management. In addition, this was not one of the targets, but I felt it was important linking to some of the to the information on human resource. It's captured in the annual report as part of the annual report at the end, but not on the targets. We had to deal with the misconduct cases and disciplinary cases. 132 cases were dealt with. We had 37 dismissals, 34 final written warning, 10 verbal warnings, and 51 written warnings. In addition, there were 455 financial misconduct cases that were handled, 183 were deferred for debt recovery, and 259 were written off. Just this is just some of the measures that we've implemented to start to deal with issues of consequence management, because we have been found to be wanting in this regard. So we are strengthening our action in this area. In terms of local offices, we had planned to audit the local offices because over the previous four financial years, we've been investing in the local office upgrades, so we decided to pause and go back and see whether those investments are working, how far have we gone. We've managed to develop the terms of reference for auditing of local offices, and we did not conduct the actual audit, and this process will continue in this financial year. On the open pay points converted to fixed structures, we had a target of 300, and when we looked, we did 262 of the open pay points were converted into fixed structures. 91 of those were steel structures that were constructed in the Eastern Cape, Free State, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Northwest. This was to avoid situations where people were paid under the trees. And then 171 of the pay points that were also in the open areas, we managed to migrate them to community structures by negotiating with local communities and community halls where they were available. We did not construct new structures. And this represents 87% of the achievement. In terms of the biometric access to grant system for 5,000 users implemented, the terms of reference for the procurement of the biometric solution for staff were developed but could not be approved. As the organization, we had to ask ourselves that whether we want to do a separate tender for biometric for access into systems and go and do another one for grants beneficiaries, because there was going to be possible duplication of the system. So we sent back the committee to go back and re-look into the terms of reference and see whether there's a possibility of those structures being combined so that we can see if we can save costs. There was also a plan to migrate 3,500 users to Microsoft platform. We managed only to migrate 227 because the process started late. There were delays in terms because we rely on Telkom. So in terms of digging of trenches in some areas, we needed special approvals, and that led to the delay in the actual implementation. In terms of, we had also planned to develop a business intelligence solution, which will help us to report accurately in terms of information and data. The enterprise business solution was procured, and the process of design has been completed, and now we are more in the implementation phase. In terms of the enterprise content management is the scanning solution. As you are aware, the SASSA has many records that we collect. We have more than 50 million records across the country. So what we decided is that in the long term, the future is to automate the records so that you don't keep big records management centers. So we started with the scanning process, and after the scanning, then we'll move into, it's a five-year plan that we have in terms of automation. So we have managed to get procurement for that, and the regions have commenced with the scanning bureaus now. On the integrated end-to-end system that needed to be developed and approved, the terms of reference for procurement of the solution have been developed. We're looking at ensuring that we capture also the issues of the payment that we are still working in, so that we don't have a solution that only focuses on application. So this process will be finalized in this financial year. In terms of the application for the SRD, the SRD was not part of the social pension system. It's administered manually. So we've asked the SOCPEN enhance the system in order to ensure that SRD, because it's got the potential for fraud if it's done manually. So we are enhancing the system, and in the long term, we want to build it into the new solution. But right now, this is the interim measure that we are working on. On the queue management system, we worked on an in-house interim queue management system because of the limitation on the of the funding, and we are busy piloting in Benoni. We piloted in Benoni, and if the solution is working out, we'll roll it out to other offices. 100% on financial management, our target was to have 100% of suppliers paid within 30 days. We can safely say that 91.63% were paid within 30 days. Majority of those that were delayed were due to disputed invoices. On the social assistance debts recovered, we only managed to achieve 1.2 instead of the 10% that we had targeted. We have also identified some of about 42 million that we needed to be written off, and we made a submission to the National Treasury. But we were advised that it must come this year as part of the DSD bid, because it needs funding in order to do effect write-offs. In terms of the audit action plan, we have dealt with all issues that were raised in the audit action plan. Moving into program two, the benefits administration and support, the first target was to reach at least 1.3 million new beneficiaries. This target is based on the trends per annum, how we've been observing people making application. This year, the trend just surprised us. It skyrocketed to 1.7 the applications that we had to deal with. And of the 1.7 million applications that we processed, 1.5 were approved, 195 were rejected because people did not qualify, and 13 by the end of the financial year were still in the process of investigation. And this would be largely around the disability grants, because they take longer to be processed. In terms of the payments, we targeted to reach 17 million. By end of the financial year, 16.9 million social assistance were in payment, and 12.5 of those were children's grants, which will include CSG, foster care, and care dependent. And 3.1 were older persons, 1 million were disability grants, 245 war veterans, and 137 were granting aid. There was a 2.1 increase in terms of the growth of social grants. And in the system, we lapsed 967. These are normally due to normal attrition, such as death or people graduating when they reach the age of 18. I've just included the tables for information purposes, just to show what are the trends. I'll just move to the one on the growth rate. We've seen a high growth rate in Gauteng and Western Cape. And when we investigated deeper, we realized that these were the provinces that previously were found to be lacking in terms of attracting children between the ages of 0 to 1. And because of the intensive communication campaign, we've seen the high rise in these two provinces. On the social relief of distress, we had 479 SRD applications that were awarded, which represent 121% over achievement. And then we had cash in terms that were 8,000, food parcels 171, vouchers 156,000, school uniforms 30,000, and others, which is 112. In addition, we had to deal with disasters which were in the form of relief, and most of them, as you know, were in Western Cape because of the fire. Of the 112 SRD awards for disasters, 100,000 were in the Western Cape, which were in the form of humanitarian relief, food parcels, food vouchers, and cash. We also looking at increasing the target of reaching children between 0 and 1. We were targeting to increase by 50,000, and for some reason the number went down. We decreased from 596 to 499, meaning that there was a decrease of 97,000. And however, Gauteng and Western Cape registered increase in the take-up rates. We are still investigating what could really have led to this sharp decrease, but we assume that in KZN, we identified a syndicate that was starting to go into children's grants, so we had to lapse a number of some of the grants that were repeated into the system. On the foster child grant reviews, in terms of the bond block, we only achieved 56% of the target. On the current, we achieved the target of was 170, and we managed to do 180 for such child care review, child grant reviews. In terms of the new grant application process, within 15 working days, 97% was achieved. And out of that 97%, 83% were the applications that were processed within a one-day turnaround. Majority of those that were not processed outside the 15 working days were on disability grants. In terms of Migonza, we had targeted to do 36 major interventions. We managed to achieve 78, which is consists of 34 major events and 44 build-up community engagements. This represents 217 overachievement. In terms of ICROP, we targeted 420, we did 570. In terms of public awareness and beneficiary education, we had 759, and the plan was to do 200. This involved fraud and theft corruption awareness. We had protection on SASSA cards. We had the issue of the Regulation 26A and the grants awareness. The sharp increase was that because of the complaints that we received in terms of the deductions, we had to intensify our communication in that area, and also on making beneficiaries to be aware of the to protect their SASSA card. And as we were starting to see that some new cards were emerging in the industry, we had to try and discourage that kind of behavior. On the biometric enrollment and identification system for beneficiaries, the biometric enrollment and identification were adopted by the agency as a plan, but the actual implementation in terms of development of the new system, we did not necessarily achieve that. In terms of the duplicate fingerprints for adults and children, we only managed to do 72 instead of 81,000 that was planned. And also on the fingerprint exceptions that we supposed to check with the Department of Home Affairs, this could not take place because the development of the specification took longer than it was expected, and the interface with Home Affairs was not feasible because of the lack of it. We did not have the normal electronics system that was required. On the new Regulation 26A received, we managed to achieve all the target as we received 460, and all of them were received and accordingly dealt with. In terms of the mandates with regard to the management of regulation, the direct deductions achieved, we managed to achieve 55 mandates with regard to management of Regulation 26A, and then the disputes against funeral policy deductions that were received were 551 and they are under investigation, and the agency developed a dispute resolution mechanism. I just included also in the information for information purposes, just statistics on the trends, because it's been a problem that we're dealing with in terms of the deductions, whether it was for electricity, EFT, and airtime. So we just included the slides for information. I will ask the CFO to take over on the financial.
Thank you, CEO, and thank you for the opportunity, Honorable Chairperson. I will quickly take you through the financials of the organization. We do understand that the operations of the agency needed financial support that needed to really give effect to the performance information as presented by the acting CEO. The agency received the transfers of 6.9 billion to support the operations and also to implement the agency needs. What I need to really confirm is that when we closed the year 2014-2015, the agency had a retained surplus, which is cash in the bank, of 1.3 billion rand. And when we received the transfers, there was a reduction on the transfers of about 284 million in the year under review. So part of the resourcing was to use the amount which we received as a transfer, but also to use part of the money that we had, which is the retained surplus, accumulated surplus over the savings that we've had over the years. So for the year under review, we had an allocation of 6.9 6 billion, which was the allocation received from DSD as a transfer. We also had a discussion with Treasury on the utilization of the retained surplus funding, and we got an approval of 621 million. And that meant that actually the agency had 7.2 billion to spend to support the performance of that organ of the agency. Hence, the spending of the agency actually set at 104%, and it could really, at the face value, seem to be an overexpenditure. But it is not an overexpenditure because it was based on two allocations. One, it was the allocation on the transfer that we received from DSD, and the other one was the use of the retained surplus funding, which of the 1.3 billion that we had as an agency. And that is captured on the slide that follows in that regard. But if you were to look at the composition of employees, you will see that there's an over underspending of about 5%. I think the acting CEO did indicate that we have appointed 1,768, and then we have also had the whole of terminations of 1,374. That is the termination. So there's been actually an increase and a decrease in the same year, and which has a net effect because at one particular point you also promoted staff from within. We have seen that under goods and services there's actually a 6% over expenditure based on the allocation or the transfer that we received from DSD. However, I did indicate that part of the goods and services were financed from the retained surplus funding. And we saw that there's actually an amount that we spend on the CAPEX, which is the capital, and this is a once-off expenditure in terms of erection of structures, like the CEO did speak about the erection of pay points. So that project of erection of pay points was funded from the retained surplus, which is the amount that we had as a savings. And that's where the overall expenditure is 104% at the end of the reporting period. Thank you, CEO. Then when we have to bring between the two programs that we did indicate, the CEO did indicate that we have only two programs, and this is the spending for the two programs. Program one, we had an allocation of 2.4 billion. We spent 2.6 billion, and there's a variance of 193 million, which was actually financed through the retained surplus. And then, when we want to really focus on the key performance or the key spending areas of the agency, this slide just reflects what were the key drivers in terms of the spending for the organization. And the net effect, which is the variance, where you will see the negatives, and this is the allocation that was made from the retained surplus. But because you can't capture that on the system, you already manage it outside the system. So it will always show as an over expenditure, but it was part of the 621 million allocation that I already alluded to. Thank you. When we look at the overall spending, which we look in terms of the locations, the agency is made of nine regions with head office, which is actually 10 major call centers. This is a slide that depicts actually the overall spending per each call center. You could look at each one of them in terms of where the overspending has happened. But that part of the overspending was actually authorized based on the retained surplus from the 621 million. After we have done our work as an agency, we had to have our work reviewed by the Office of the Auditor General, and the SASA books were audited. The SASA performance was audited. We did receive as an organization an unqualified audit opinion from the Office of the Auditor General. And the financial statements were on material presented the financial position of the agency for the period ended 31st March 2016. And we also noted that the financial performance and the financial cash flow was in line with the required standards, which is the GRAP standards. And we also noted that after the audit, there was no any other issues that were found in terms of the predetermined objectives, in terms of the stating and the reliability and the useful of the usefulness of the information presented to the AG. However, even if we did get an unqualified audit opinion, there are matters of evidence that actually we want to really share with the committee. And they were categorized in the audit report into three categories. And one is the irregular expenditure of $1.1 billion, which I will try to really brief the committee about. And also an issue of about fruitless and wasteful expenditure of $10.9 million at the end, which was the closing balance. And there were issues relating to the internal controls. And in the internal controls were actually in three areas. That is the issue of lack of sufficient review and oversight, the timely implementation of proper record keeping, which I'm going to get back to what led to this, and also the old issue of about investigations that are done within the organization and outside the organization by the SIU. This slide indicates the $1.1 billion which was raised by the Auditor General. And we did actually tabulate the transactions that are very important for the noting by the committee. When we opened the year in 2015-16, we had $93 million of regular expenditure. But when you were to go back and look at the financial statements of the agency for the 2014-15, there was a paragraph that we did indicate there, and it had a lot of transactions which we call possible irregular expenditure. When we talk about possible irregular expenditure, these are the transactions that are under review to confirm whether those transactions are actually irregular or are they not irregular expenditure. So when you look the first time is that the $18 million that is added on the opening balance, it relates to the current year. Of the $18 million that we're talking about, actually $16 million of that $18 million, these are the transactions that were started and completed in the year under review, which is 2015-16. And it was the $18 million that of irregular expenditure made of $16 million that relates to the leases that has expired. And in other instances, where you find that we shared accommodation with the provincial and the Department of DSD, and in other instances, they left sometimes without communicating and notifying us. And we had to take some of the leases on board, actually, to keep the services, because you can't just move to an office where your clients are being serviced. Then you have the second addition, which is the $316 million. This is a matter that was put in the previous financial statements as a possible irregular expenditure. This is a transaction that we had to do an additional registration and the resourcing of the registration project, which happened in 2012 to 2013. Remember that there was a big re-enrollment of beneficiaries during that period. And we know that during that time, we had to clean the SASSA database, and we have to employ resources. We appointed a contractor, which is CPS, at the $10 billion. And when we wanted to do that, we needed additional resources that had to do with other matters of infrastructure, the numbers, and the categories that needed to be registered, which is taking biometrics of children and procurators. We had to apply what we call a variation order. And when we did a variation order, we applied and we got an approval by the accounting authority to do that. However, there were accounting issues that related to that transaction. I could report and put myself on record that this matter is before the court. Currently, this transaction is being reviewed by the court. We're still waiting for a court date. It's a matter between SASSA and Corruption Watch, and it's a matter that we are awaiting actually to be dealt with. And hence, then we can be able to deal with the merits and the demerits of the transaction. But for now, we understand that SASSA is going to go on to court once the date has been determined. The other amount of $414 million, This relates to the security, extension of physical security contract. This is not an amount that was incurred in 1 year. It's a cumulative of transactions that ran from 2012 to the end of 2015. This is a transaction where we have appointed security companies in the SASA offices, which is the 9 regions and plus head office, through a due process, a supply chain management due process. However, when that term of that contract expired, we could not conclude on the procurement process. So we advertised on time, but when the bids were received, the bids were non-responsive. So we opted as an organization to extend the running contract. However, the extensions became thrice when we have extended that. And National Treasury wrote to the agency to say we could not have extended those contracts. We should have at least went out on another process rather than extending the existing contract. And we had a lot of discussion with National Treasury. Even now, we're still engaging National Treasury on that transaction. And this is more on the extension of a running contract, which was still actually valid. And National Treasury had an opinion that we should not have extended those contracts. We should have at least allowed those contracts to end and then enter into a new arrangement via a new supply chain management process. The basis for the extension was that the bids that we went out and we advertised, we closed the bids, we had the evaluations, and we done all the processes. However, the bids were not responsive. And when the bids are not responsive, you do consider either to extend the contract or you have to apply a deviation where you have to really get into a quotation process to really acquire new services. And that was concluded. The 223 million, this is the issue of the leases with the trifecta. This is transactions that happened or the contracts concluded between 2006 and 2007. You will note that SASA was established in 2006. And at the establishment, SASA did not have all the capacity. So we had to take some of the contracts from the provincial department at the time. But at the same time, there was an arrangement that the provincial department were assisting SASA actually in terms of the starting lineup. Then when we entered into these leases in the Northern Cape, we had about 4 leases in the Northern Cape. We had 1 in Northwest. And these were concluded between 2006 and 2007. However, on review of this contract, we could not find the procurement process documentation that supported this. And that's why the Auditor General said that we did not necessarily put processes to keep the documentation. We searched the documentation and the consultation. We could not necessarily get all the procurement processes. I think we understand that there was a court case in the Northern Cape relating to the trifecta, and which for now it's on the appeal. It was concluded and a verdict was issued, and National Treasury advised us, because we wrote to National Treasury to say, how do we treat these transactions in this nature? And National Treasury said, you need to really recognize it as a regular expenditure. So now we are in the engagement and following the court process until we can be able to get that. What are we doing with the transactions? 2 things that we have done. 2 of the contracts we're renegotiating in terms of the terminations, obviously, because this was a 10-year contract that we entered into. And the other 3, we are also negotiating to see whether we can renegotiate the terms and get actually into a new arrangement so that we avert a further irregular expenditure in that regard. However, we'll await the National Treasury in terms of further guidance, because this does not only affect SASA, it affected a number of government departments in this case. And also we will be following the court process to really deal with this matter. The 74 million that you see there, this relates to the forensic investigation. This relates to an appointment of a company that was assisting SASA. This was done through a normal bid process. It was an open bid process. However, at an awarding of this, we have considered a company, which is SAPNT, And that process was taken on a review through a court process. And when we went there, the court decided that they gave a verdict that we should not have passed over a particular service provider that should have been. We should have awarded to that. And therefore, they did not set the contract aside, but they said actually that contract is invalid in terms of the awarding of that contract. We have since taken steps to wrap up the contract that we were talking about so that we should not incur any further dealings with it. We are at the stage where we're just doing the close-up report and everything so that we can go out actually and deal with it. But the going forward of this transaction obviously will be to engage with National Treasury in terms of the further treatment from the condonation of this transaction, which will be concluded during the course of this year. And we had actually minor adjustments of the transactions that we're talking to. Thank you, sir. I have already spoken to this. I have already spoken to those other ones. I will allow the CEO just to make the closing remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CFO. Just in conclusion, just want to emphasize that the trifecta contracts were part of those that were migrated from Department of Social Development to SASA. So it's part of the things that we inherited. Just want to make a recommendation that we recommended the Portfolio Committee to note and support SASA's annual performance report and the financial statements. We also recognize that we have regressed in terms of our performance, achievements of our performance information, and we are working on that area in order to improve the performance of the organization. We can't afford to come here and say we are proud that we regressed. We note that we need to do better as the organization. So we have put mechanisms to deal with that area of performance and also to deal with the issues of irregular expenditure. We cannot be proud that we have 1 billion in our books. It's not a good record for a big organization that's supposed to represent the pool. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
I acknowledge Honorable Masango and Umamu Wilson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you to the department for the presentation. Thank you. Yes, I'm sure my colleagues and everybody else would cover quite a few things, and the CEO is correct in saying 1 billion plus is a lot in anybody's language here. I just want to talk about the audit opinion history, saying that in the 14-15 financial year, it was mentioned that the irregular and fruitless wasteful expenditure and no steps was taken. And then, of course, it occurred again in 15-16. The recommendations was made there, and it hasn't been followed. I just want to make a comment and say that it should be followed. In your report, you also state that the PFMA, you know, is followed. Now, I'm not a CA, but just for an ordinary layman on my side, that I don't understand the PFMA, I don't understand that, and you would find people would ask you questions and so on, so that maybe it should become a tool of the day, so that it be followed, because the PFMA is a very important document. You can't be reading in one instance about it being followed, and then when you actually go and you scrutinize the report, you actually find irregularities. Also, the critical position must be filled of the CEO, because that is a position that gives leadership to the organization. Your resignation is very high. I'd like to know what is the department doing on the exit interviews. What is the follow-ups when people get interviewed, and how do you actually strategize to improve on the resignations? Is there a mentorship plan? Is there a succession plan? How do you do that? The misconduct also very high. You've mentioned your consequence management has taken place. But again, if we go through the report, we see that it's reoccurring. What assurance can you give us that it won't occur again? 183 referred to debt recovery, which is 2.4 million. Then while 259 were written off. So what is the reason for writing off and not going into a debt recovery? SASSA also needs to strengthen and on their monitoring and supervision, compliance with the processes and procedures. I think the supervision is very, very important. Even if there's a lack of leadership on top somewhere along the line, it should be seen. Like I've said, the PFMA is a very, very important tool of your business. If you can utilize it daily, not just certain times, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me begin on the issue of the targets. On the APP, the entity had 37 targets that they planned, but they only achieved 18 targets. Can perhaps the entity explain to us what is going to happen to the targets that were not achieved? Are they going to be taken to the next financial year or what? Secondly, Chairperson, let me come to the issue of the additional funding that they were talking about of 621 million that was approved by the National Treasury. When you go to page 15 of the actual annual report, the report states that they managed to spend 226 million from that 621 million. Therefore, there's a difference of 395 million when you do the calculation, Chair, that is not reported on. Can they perhaps afford an opportunity to the committee to do the breakdown on the difference that is not reflected on the annual report on their spending, Chairperson? On the issue of compliance and legislation, the Auditor General has identified that the entity has not complied with the legislation. On the issues that they incurred in irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditures, that is over a billion. Chairperson, on that issue, what are the measures that they are in place to prevent these unlawful expenditures? The second one, I think Honorable Bev has said it, that in the previous financial year, they did not take any action in regard with those irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditures. Then what are the actions that are going to be done to those who failed to comply with the legislation? Yes, the acting CEO has said that they have regressed in terms of their performance, which is very bad, really. Because I think when you look at the AG report, the AG states very well that the role of the AG on this process that we are doing, actually even the portfolio committee, the process that we are engaging in, is a process that we want entities, departments to account or to lead to a very good governance process. Chairperson, let me come also to the issue of the implementation of the biometric authentication system in preparation for the institutionalized system that the entity has been reporting to us over this period that we have been engaged with. I just want them to briefly perhaps explain to us how far is the process and it ends. Are they going to be able to implement that resolution within the time frame that they have promised in the committee? Thank you, Chair. sorry, Honorable Master, I just wanted to add, they must also, if they are not going to implement it within the stipulated time frame that they put, they must also tell us, Chairperson, give us an information whether they are going to implement that system within. And if they are not going to implement it, they must also give us the reasons so that we know as a portfolio committee what will be the reason not to institutionalize the whole system.
Thank you, Chair. I would also like to thank the presentation or the presenters for the presentation. In fact, my question follows right to the question that was asked by Honorable Soledi, because when you go to the annual report on page 18, which is the acting CEO's report, you find a paragraph that refers to the institutionalization of the grant payment system, where it outlines the advisory committee's report that is going to phase out the institutionalization of the grant payment situation. Now, Chairperson, coming back to you, this, for me at least, is a huge project to undertake in any language, and it involves a lot of preparation and also the history of the project to say that it's where it is because there have been court deliverables that are outlined from the Constitutional Court and everything. So everybody is looking at this thing, most significantly because it has got about 17 million people that are dependent on it. So if one sees that there's a phase approach that is being followed, that is very relieving. But one would like that plan because we have asked for the plan from SASA and from the department, and all we were given were the assurances that the plan is being implemented. I think as from 2014, if I'm not mistaken, that there are work streams that are working flat out on this thing, and it's being implemented. So my question, with that very very brief background, is where is the plan? Number one, can we have access to the plan as the portfolio committee because we exercise oversight on the entity? And secondly, are we then, as Honourable Soledi was asking, are we ready or is SASA ready to take over this process? And I guess that will be in the plan. And also, one would like to know, in terms of the, I believe there are 10 deliverables that were given by the Constitutional Court, there were 7 deliverables that were given by the Constitutional Court that will sort of lead to the full, fully-fledged institutionalization of the process by the 1st of April next year. So one would like to know, of the 7, how many have been implemented? Because some of them were due, I believe, to be implemented even this year. There are some of those that are supposed to have been done this year. So that is my question on that one. Just to know, are we ready? If not, what are we doing about I just am interested in the state of readiness for SASA to take over this very huge undertaking come April next year. And I would like to, my second question, Chair, refers to the presentation that was made by the CFO, going back to the 414 million rand irregular expenditure on the extension of physical security contract. I appreciate the explanation that went there, but my question is, what is happening as we speak? Who is providing security at head office and in the 9 region, and within what arrangement is that? are we extending again? Because the annual report refers to many times of extending. Is this one of those many times now in this financial year? And I would like to this would be my last one, Chair, but I would like to go back to the exercise of sufficient oversight and say that yesterday we sat in a meeting where we had the department, department and the NDA, and throughout, like cross-cutting, was the issue of oversight not being exercised. And as a result, we are getting the audit opinions that we are getting. I just want to know, because also I read back to the previous annual report, and that was the issue. And I appreciate the fact that the acting CEO has expressed, to say that they know that this has been happening. But my concern, I'm expressing a concern here, just to say what is being put in place as a matter of urgency, because the monies that are involved are quite a lot. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sure the Honourable Member is not saying a oversight by the Portfolio Committee, but the oversight internally. Yes. But secondly, when they respond to the issue of state of readiness to institutionalize, they will also assure the Portfolio Committee that their human resource and the organogram talks to how they will be implementing this whole issue, and what if the service provider had created jobs, etc. What will happen to those employees? I think that's a negotiation that is between them and the streams that are managing. So you will only add that. Can I then give to Honourable Umama Wilson to have her input? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to follow on from questions and issues raised by my colleague, because we are very concerned about the state of readiness, and we have done lots of looking into the situation, and it's very concerning. There were 7 deliverables in the Constitutional Court. I have those in front of me. You guys know what they are, and I want to deal specifically with the pilot phase, March to June 2014, of the web-based application, integrated mainframe application. Is that delivered? May 16, the biometric access by users, ensure by May 2016 the bulk biometric for beneficiaries exists, and the TOR was completed for both. January 2017, round the corner. Are your payment files done? Is payment processing controlled accounts established? Payment reconciliation and real-time reconciliation due date January 7, 2017. That the data factory is set up and that the tender is awarded during September 2015. Is that done? Payment infrastructure, October 2016. Implementation, October 2016. Cash distribution and security thereof. Delivery date, October 2016, needs to be outsourced. And from January to March 27, contracts with merchants must be finalized. The card issuance and special bank accounts between October 2016 and March 2017, whereby consultations with the South African Reserve Bank, PAS, and government printers must be finalized by February 2016. We're talking about beneficiaries to 17 million South Africans. We've got one paragraph or three lines in this entire report dealing with the transition to the takeover by SASSA. 9.5 million of nearly 10 million people of those people are on bank cards, okay? Whether they be bank cards or NetOne's cards, whoever you put them under, they're actually bank cards. They are MasterCards with an expiry date at the end of March next year. Those cards expire. They are bank cards. They expire like all bank cards do. Have we printed another 9.5 million cards? Are they ready for distribution? Or are we entering into another contract, whether it be with NetOne or Grindrod or whichever institution you're using, to make sure that come May, April, when people receive their money, that they actually have cards to collect them from? The biometrics, very important. And then please advise, because we've asked for reports and progress reports on this. Treasury, I am sure, must have received by now a budgeting or a costing or how your work stream is going to pay out. I'm sure they must have received it. Can we get some information from that, please? Who is on the advisory committee? Are they paid? And if they are paid, how much are they paid? And where do they show in this budget? Okay, in this annual report. Who are the work stream leaders? Are they internal employees or are they external employees? Are they paid? And if so, where do I find them in this annual report? There's no reflection of this in the budget. There is so much at stake for 17 million people, and despite requests, despite information from work streams, who are the leaders, who are not the leaders, who's responsible for what, we are being denied information. And this is clearly indicative to us that SAFA is nowhere near ready to take over the 1st of April 2017. And if I read just the three lines that are put in this report, it says, oh, no, now we're going to implement this stage naught we've done, stage one we're busy with, stage two and three or three and four, whatever it is, we will do from March 2017 to April 2019, 2 years. So we've now gone 2 years over that. What is being implemented now? What is not? Who's continuing with this contract? Who is not? Important questions, please, Chair.
Sorry for interruption, but I do want to urge you to say we are not dealing with the, detailed report on this process. It is an annual report. Can I finish, ma'am, honourable member? That the detail, if we were to work on the detail of the methodology, how they are going to apply it, it would eat all our time. And I do know you have not reached the... No, allow me to do my work, to guide the meeting. Please, ma'am. Please, honorable member. I'm requesting you to stick to the questions, but as I listen, it's a detail on one point. Yet we've got a number of points which you yourself would want to talk to. Please, I'm not saying stop, but I'm requesting that we don't want to detail one program. It's not even a full program for that matter. So it's a matter that is there. We listen when they respond to you, and then you can ask the detail, the other questions as a follow-up. Please, let's give them. We note your concern. They have taken it. They will respond to you. Please. Thank you.
I raise it because these things should be in the annual report and they are not there. There is absolutely no discussion about events that are taking place that should be in the annual report that are not there.
I don't agree, honourable member, that the detail, the annual report is not a detail. There are often detailed reports separately, but the annual report is the consolidation of all programs that have been done. So if we were to detail program one, program two, then it would be indeed, in fact, there is where we had agreed. Can I read it for you? I'm sorry to take you back because we have written here in our program as the oversight body that on Wednesday, which is 16 November 2016, briefing by SASA on the progress made on implementing the High Court ruling and all those matters. It's a matter that is part of our oversight, but it is quite, honourable member, impossible to have that in this annual report, I beg you. So I'm not limiting your scope of speaking, but I'm guiding where we should in order to accommodate the entire report instead of dealing with one part. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm glad they're coming back, but we've just run out of time. We've just run out of time on this.
You can continue if you still have questions, or you will have a second bite.
I'll have a second bite because the rest of my questions are all around the illegal expenditure and in the financial specifically. Thank you.
So, because I don't want your matters, honorable members, to be lost when we are to answer, I am going to give the you acting DG to actually respond. But you will first respond about yourself as to when is the department going to have a DG. Is that, that one you will go past when you are acting DG, but talk and Sasa CEO. So those two you can just go by. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Madam Chair, we've actually made excellent progress in that regard, in the sense that as I speak, first, the appointment of the CEO of SASA has been finalized. Cabinet approved the recommended candidate. It's a matter of organizing when the candidate is going to assume duty at SASA. That is the SASA CEO. Secondly, the National Development Agency, we as the Social Development National Department have appointed a CEO for SASA, and she should be assuming duty, because it was announced by Cabinet as well, before the end of the month. Now, with regards to the Director General position of the Department of Social Development, interviews were held, a candidate was selected. As we speak, the appointment of the Director General of the Department of Social Development is en route to Cabinet for Cabinet approval and endorsement. So as we speak, really the three positions are in the at the very, very finalized stage, and have already indicated that with regards to the SASA CEO, the appointment has been endorsed by Cabinet. NDA CEO, endorsed by Cabinet. The only one that's outstanding, that is en route to Cabinet, is the DG of the Department of Social Development.
We, as the Portfolio Committee, were raising this because those are strategic positions upon which we depend for an effective management. So we're happy to hear the announcement, and it will be known today that you have gone that milestone. Thank you. You can continue.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Now, according to the questions that members have fielded on the annual report, they mainly fall under two key categories. The one really is around the issue of expenditure that has either been declared as irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And the other big issue is the question of, is SASA ready to take over the payment of social grants, because the contract of the current service provider is coming to an end come March 2017. Now, Chair, it seems as if these two issues are the main key one. And we're quite aware as well that there are specific questions that have been raised. I would like to make a suggestion, Chair, because a view is being held that we are withholding information. And that is not indeed the case. We are a total, complete state entity, and we account with all the required information to yourselves. Now, it appears as if, as you have already pointed out, Chair, that there's great detail that is being required, i.e., where are we at as an organization in terms of taking over the payment of grants? Now, it could be one of two things, Chair. We are ready to get into the detail, the complete total detail as to how far and what is it that we have done as an organization up to now. And therefore, how are we preparing for the takeover? We can either provide you that detail, or we reach an agreement that at a near date, whether it's next week or whenever the committee is available, that we come and provide that detail, to the minutest detail as to where we are at. Therefore, depart largely from the annual report and focus specifically on that. We'll be guided by the committee if the committee thinks that's the way it will like us to proceed and go ahead with these things.
Can you just hold and allow the Honorable Mama Toletti to say?
Chairperson, because I asked that question, the detailed information, I think it's proper that now that they are here, just to highlight, because we understand that the real details, they will have to have time for them to come and present the real detail. I think the most important question that South Africans would want to know is how far are you going to implement it by the due date? If not, 1, 2, 3. But the detailed one, Chairperson, I think I agree that will also have to be presented in the committee, because it will also need us to engage. Where we have to make input to the committee, we will be making the input. But for now, can we get the highlights just for them to take us through a little bit, not the actual deeper details? Thank you, Chair.
Because I depend on honorable members, pass that note to Honorable Wilson, so that if there is anything that is left, because we have got a set date to deal with that, so that she can add it there before we adopt it. But I agree fully with you that the member from the acting DG is not saying they are going to be silent about it, but they are making indication that above what they are going to say, they will also would like to do what we have already decided as a committee. So I'm pretty sure you are not going to talk about this, but as a leader of that delegation, you're still going to give to the line function manager to respond to the highlight. So let's have in that arrangement. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
I hear what Honourable Soledi is saying, but specifically I want to know, have we complied with the judgment as per the court? Have we met those deadlines? And have those reports been submitted? Have you submitted the payment model to Treasury? Because if we've got surpluses and we haven't submitted that payment model, they are going to take our budget away, and that is concerning because then we cannot function. That's important.
But Honourable Member, can you allow them to answer the questions? Then what you also want to raise is the question. Your time is still coming. Can we allow that process? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the issue then of the different kinds and types of expenditure as reflected in the annual report, we will tackle those first. Now, prior to tackling them though, and please, my sincere apologies to you, Chair, for this, I think where I sit and where I stand, and also with the CEO of SASSA as well as the Chief Financial Officer, we think it's important that we clarify for the benefit of all of us, what is irregular expenditure, right? What is unauthorized expenditure, and what is wasteful and fruitless expenditure? Because those are indeed remarkably different. So I just think that we probably just need to start there.
And I find two members, if it's important for them, because I think they know. I think they do know, and as well as I know.
Right.
Yeah, so you better respond When they say you are not responding, I will be there to say to intervene and say you are talking to irregular, you are talking to wasteful, etc. I will help you with that, but it will take a lot of our time if we allow you to give that information. Now we know.
Thank you, Chair. May I then ask both the CEO of SASSA with the assistance of the Chief Financial Officer to tackle the matters and issues insofar as they relate to the 1 billion rand. Now, there is a point that was raised primarily around the issue first of compliance and controls, because we are not creating a history of these kind of amounts reflecting continuously and constantly on our annual report as SASSA. I would ask the CEO then to take that matter, and Mr. Chauke, please, if you can be in a position to add.
Thank you very much. Comments and questions are really noted, and just to start on the issue of the irregular expenditure, as I've indicated that this is something that is not... Please, madam, if you could come closer to your mic and bring your chair. Thank you very much. Okay. Maybe not to waste your time, I'll just ask the CFO first to give it a bite, because at least he can talk more louder and clearer, and then I can add on the issues. But just to indicate that on the issues of some of the financial misconduct cases that we dealt with related to the previous year's irregular expenditures and fruitless and wasteful expenditures. So that's why I included that slide in particular to indicate that we started to take action. Yes, it's not yet big. We're still going ahead. We're still working on it, and we'll put mechanisms to deal with that. I just want the CFO to give the details, then I'll come back and talk about the measures that we've put in place.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chen. Well, we'll start with the issue relating to the consequence management, which has been raised by the committee. You will note that actually in one of the slides that we have indicated, we have said we have actually dealt with 455 cases in relation to the financial misconduct, because that relates financial misconduct include your fruitless, your irregular expenditure. What we have done, we firstly strengthened the operations of the financial misconduct board, and we have made sure that in all the regions we have established this forum or structure called the financial misconduct board. The second part, what we have done during the later part of the 2015-16, we have actually strengthened the internal control of the unit by appointing a senior manager strictly to deal with the internal control issues, but also to deal with as an audit champion within the organization. And what we have done, we have reviewed all the processes and the terms of reference. So you will realize that we're not necessarily not saying we're not taking action. We are taking action, because if you look at of the 455 cases that we have dealt with, 2.4 million, we have taken debt against the officials. And it means that where we have lost any funding, where there's been an oversight, then we are actually taking action around it. However, what we have done was that for us to avoid, because that was another question to say, how do you do the preventative matter? During this year, what we have done, we have appointed a compliance senior manager. So there's a person who's called as SCM compliance senior manager. And what we are doing now is to audit all existing contracts. So because irregular expenditure is going to be recognized at the time when you pick it up. So it is going to be picked up because AG, they do assembly. So instead of approaching it from the sampling point of view, we as an organization taken a position just to review all the contracts that we have. So have the listing to check whether we have followed due processes, whether there are any documents that are missing, and then we can do the correction if ever there's any need for correction. And that's the one part. On the new contracts, we are actually now looking at the implementation of the pre and post audit of when you award the contract.
because then there should be another person to review all the steps that we have taken as an organization to say that we have not missed any step in that regard. And once we have done those two elements, we should be able to have a very safe environment where you can have a preventative measure because you can at least address that particular issue. The other two issues that were implemented in the year 2016-17 is to try to say part of our own operational target, which is not on the APP, is to say that if ever then there is an allegation of a financial misconduct, to conclude that matter within 90 days. So if you conclude that, then you need people to review and investigate. Parallel to this process, we have agreed that because we have a lot of backlog cases which relates to what the AG has been complaining about, to say you taking too much time to finalize whatever allegations that exist currently, we have now, through the approval of the accounting authority, just to really implement a project-based approach to deal with the backlog cases, which means that the investigations and also the finalization of taking any actions in relation to that. Once we have then done those, we'll have dealt with two main issues. One, it will be the preventative measure. The other part, it will have been the issue of a deterrent in terms of what we need to do. And we believe that there's consciousness in terms of consequence management. Come the end of 2016-17, we'll have a better picture, actually, in terms of dealing with these issues of the financial misconduct. And in that instance, we understand that already we're dealing with all the officials, about 10,000 of them, across the organization. But from the executive committee point of view, we are also on the ground talking to our officials to really be sensitive to the policies and adherence to the policies of the organization. I'm not sure if CEO, I can deal with the other question relating to the page 15. Yes. Let me talk to the issues of the 200 that we're saying that, well, how did we account for the 621 million that doesn't seem that we have not spent all of them. The bulk of the money, which is called the 1.3 billion, which is the retained surplus funding, it is earmarked, and the bulk of it is earmarked actually for the insourcing of the payment. And there are a lot of procurement process that follows through. So if you have not necessarily concluded on some of the agreements and the procurement process, which is the detailed plan that you want to see, so if then you will be able to get the detailed plan, you'll be able to see how the finances are supporting that plan in that regard, because they are actually key projects. Like, I can give an example. If we have awarded the biometric bid and finalized that process, we'll have spent probably between 100 and probably 150 million. Okay. And because we have not necessarily concluded on that particular element, then that 150 million is actually on the retained surplus. Because it was a once-off in terms of acquisition of the hardware, then we understood that we could not spend money on something that we have not concluded. So it is linked, it's interlinked. But what we have done, we have just decided that we're going to ring fence only that part. The money that you see, which is the bulk of what is spent of the 200 million that has been spent, it relates to the infrastructure relating to the pay points and relating to the local office improvement project, but also some of the other operational that supports actually the main business of SASA. But the bulk of the almost 400 million that was not spent is linked actually to the future payment of SASA, and which is the detailed plan that the committee is talking about. So that is the accounting part of it. But they are broken projects, because that amount is actually per project, but it is allocated to the ones of projects that are linked actually to the payment. And those details can only be read in conjunction with the project in terms of the future payment. And that's probably where we are. But if you want the names of the projects, then with that information is available and I have it at my disposal. But it will not make sense unless you get actually details in terms of what was the initial plan and how the financial plan actually supports that operation. There was a question relating to...
As long as we are able to clarify issues so that when you end, we don't start taking you back. Can I allow any, if there is something you want to check within what has already been said, as a spoon they are on the floor?
Okay, Chair, my point is the point that he has just made, that if we want to the detailed part of the actual what has happened with all the money. I think it's important that it must be provided to the portfolio committee because we want to make sense of each and every rand that has been spent or the rent that is going to be spent. They know that, Chairperson. So I would really appreciate that the same information should be provided to us at a later stage as a portfolio committee so that the questions that we have, we are able also to answer those questions to our constituencies based on the issues that are on the table, Chair. Thank you.
Yes, I appreciate the fact that you have come up to say this issue of insourcing is work in progress, and therefore there are funds that are directly linked or attached to the work in progress, which we will get on the 16th of November, Honourable Member. Immediately we go to that particular day to focus on the insourcing process and then be able to be comfortable, because we are always worried about we can't sleep on duty. We must always be able to know this will happen, even if it has not happened. So can I allow you to continue? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. The other part was more around the write-off in terms of the debt. What we have done, during the year 2009-2010, when we were migrating actually in the system, which is the Oracle, the system that we're dealing with, there were other transactions that were relating to the overpayment, and we have followed the due process in terms of the legal process and engaging with whoever owed SASSA. And these matters were defended, and some of them I can just admit to the committee that we delayed in the implementation of the follow-ups. And some of them were the issues in terms where people are raising the issues of the prescription of a debt. And at that particular point, you could not necessarily have any leg to stand on actually to recover that money beyond what you could have done. But when we came as management, we wanted to put actually in processes now. We look at the debt book now, we will see that actually there's actually movement in relation to how we're dealing with it. But these transactions, we have followed the due process and the legal process to the latter. And when we came to that conclusion that we just need to write off that amount, there's no any other way in which you can relate to that. We hardly write off amounts without any due process. There should be a due process which is auditable. And these reasons were reviewed by the Auditor General, and they were satisfied with that. And linked to that, you will have seen that the SASSA actually, even performance and audit report, there's been a lot of improvement, actually, if you were to compare in terms of the control environment that actually is within SASSA. And the Auditor General will say there was no material findings around. They've just put it on record that actually there's no material finding in relation to that, except the issues that it was carried over, issues that we needed to conclude on, and which is the irregular expenditures that I have already alluded to, which had to deal with it. The issue of the security, when we received that guidance that we need to disclose this as a regular expenditure, we firstly went quickly on tender process, but also parallel to that, we also had to really mitigate the extension or the perpetual incurring of the irregular expenditure. So we put a temporary contract, but now we're on a permanent contract actually starting from, July. So we're actually on a three-year contract, and we have done it through an open bid process. So the committee doesn't have to worry about the existence of contracts. The contracts that are there are the contracts that we awarded. And National Treasury came also to review our process. Unfortunately, we have not got the feedback from them, but they came and they sent the people to review everything, actually, what we've done. So we're very comfortable that that environment is taken care of. So we are actually looking at that. And part of what we have done within the finance, we have said that if ever then the bid closes, then we should be able to award it within 90 days. So put in processes. So we report on consistently on the projects that are currently on procurement stage.
Saying there is an interim measure that the Honourable Member asked if who is guarding you now, and you said we have got a temporal specific contract designed to allow this space, isn't it?
No, we have we have a permanent contract for
permanent,
today.
That has been approved.
Yeah.
There's no more extensions.
No, there are no extensions. The extensions were done, then there are no extensions.
We're on a
permanent arrangement, contractual obligations.
A little bit of a chore, you can move forward. Yes, I'll take the second round.
Through you, Chair, I would take it that the questions that were pertaining to the issues of monies, the expenditure, have all been exhausted before we move on to the other one. Okay.
Can I request for the Honorable Mama Hope and Mama Wilson? Mama, can I start first Mama Sondi and then Mama Masango? I've acknowledged you, Madam. You can be on the floor. Masondi will come after Mama. If you have not spoken, then there will be Mama Wilson and Mama Masango in that arrangement.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Chairperson. There were issues, and it was related to when it comes to irregular expenditure by our CFO. That was very topical within our newspapers. And I think it will just be fair, although we know, as you said, that this case is sub judice, it's going back to court. I'd like our department to speak on the 316 rand, 316 million irregular expenditure that was for a re-registration of grant beneficiaries. Because according to page 16 in your annual report, the amount was paid out. And I think it was, you know, elaborated a lot within the newspapers. And what we are interested in is, if it's registrations, re-registrations that were done, just speak to us. Just briefly on the amount and what benefits the department received with this re-registration that took place. And then I think what will be important too is you speak of company was appointed to review the payment. Just tell us which company that was. Then, because we were quite confused, but, you know, when we read that page, but I think you'll clarify it now for us. Then the other question that I would like to ask is on now, the supply chain management question was answered. So I won't speak to that, and I won't speak to the others. I'll just that question to you. Thank you.
Honorable Sondi.
Thanks, Chairperson. Okokuqala, ngibulele the presentation esizayifumana namhlanje ku department. Nizoqala laphaya. Tithusa une vision. A leader in the delivery of social security services. Number two, a mission to administer social security services to eligible children, older persons, and people with disabilities. On a slogan, 40, a city paying the right social grant to the right person at the right time and place. Why in the La Payaku vision the mission Neslogan? There is some a lot of old women or old person who are complaining about the deductions on their grants, and then when they are asking why they deducted those money from their, money from their grants, they say they bought an airtime, although they don't know even how to use the phones. Number two, the youth who are getting that grant for the children. But there are those who are getting the money, but they don't have any children. They are called Baholela Imbombos. So I just want to know, into njengaleyo inga preventwa kanjani, because there are those who are supposed to get that money, but they don't get it. Ngiyavuma ezombombozi, they are called imbombozi, kakhulu ku rural areas. Bayayifuna la mali, so they are making all plans, all strategy to get it, because okokuqala bayahlupheka abasebenzi abananto balambile, but when it comes bebanjwa kuzophinde kube buhlungu futhi. I think ingathi bangazama ngandlela zonke ukuthi bayithole la mali ngendlela efanelekileyo. Thank you, Chairperson.
The honorable member is actually aligning the current problem she's raising about the deductions either of electricity or cell phones without the permission of those rural poor who sometimes don't have any connection with electricity or do not know how to use cell phones, but they get their deductions, the deductions being done in their own grant, which is not necessarily in line with your vision and all that. But lastly, she is also arguing that she does understand that there is fraudulent payment to those who claim to have children who do not have. But she is also saying the dilemma she has is that those are poor and they need this money, and therefore they decide to get it the other way around. And in that regard, how are you able to assist that they don't end up stealing? They can have a way of being assisted because they are poor and they are in need. So any preventive measures or any better initiatives that can make them comfortable and be protected from stealing. I think and we will interpret.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am also going to go, but I'm going to work from the annual report itself. I prefer to work from there. One of the first things that I picked up in the annual report I'd like clarity on, please, is the $6.7 million out-of-court settlement paid to an ex-CEO. I'm presuming it's Fazilian Makiwani, a case that took place in 2009-2010. What are we doing with an out-of-court settlement, number one, that we don't know about, and why is it being paid at this period in time? I'm very interested to know the background to that situation. I want to talk on the irregular expenditure, and of particular concern, because it has been in the press, the $316 million, and the forensic investigation under SABNT. I'm very concerned about that one particularly because it was an instruction given by the most senior person in the department overriding a bid adjudication decision. But you say that is now in court. Am I correct? SABNT is in court. And people have been charged. Or is it just investigation? deathly silence.
Okay.
Answered. Question answered. Thank you, Chair. And the 316...
Honourable Member, they can't answer to you. It should be via me, and ask them from via me.
I shall ask them, Chair. I must soon check simple via you, Chair. What has somebody been charged?
Thank you. I'm losing power here.
My other concern is on the 316 million. It has been in the press. It was extensively discussed that the Treasury condoned this amount and then withdrew its condonation. And we have reason to believe on the grounds that SASA did not submit all the documentation and allow Treasury to make an informed decision. I think that's very, very concerning. In the annual statements, annual reports, also concerned because there was a KPMG report attached to that 316, but I think that's part of the court case, so let's leave it there. I want to go to fruitful and wasteful expenditure, and it's page 103 of the annual report. 4 million rand of wasteful expenditure on damaged vehicles hired from rental companies. That is mind-blowing. We have just spent a fortune on a new fleet for SASA. Fancy, we see them, these bright yellow and green motion machines going through all the provinces. But we're sitting on a fruitless expenditure of taxpayers' money of 4 million on damage to hired vehicles. I find that mind-blowing. If we can have an explanation there. And the other thing that is really concerning me is 1.1 million of taxpayers' money irregularly spent on a Makonza event that was cancelled. How are we allowing these things in this department to happen? Surely not. And to who was that money paid? I'm very interested. Who organized that Makonza event? Because if we lost that money to an event that was cancelled very suddenly, it wasn't a SASA event, it was an event organized through somebody.
I know that there are a million questions.
I've got lots.
Can I request the Honourable Member to ask questions so that you give space to others? Because we can't be putting a specific speaking time, because that will limit us. But at the same time, if there are too many questions, the department is unable to really focus. Can I request you that you give to Mama
Masango
now?
I'll come back with the rest. Thank you. I've got lots, Chair.
It's okay. Bye. Mama Masango, you are on the floor.
Thank you, Chair. My question, I take it, Chair, that we are going to have the highlights that we thank you. My question relates to the slide 47 on page 24. That refers to the budget, the spending on the Eastern Cape being 124%. I know that all the other provinces also had very high, they achieved the targets and exceeded them. But I just want to know, is there something that needs to be noted for 124% spending on the Eastern Cape? And then the next question relates to the filling of posts. I would like to know if the posts that have been filled include the regional offices where you have, I think when I was looking in the internet, where in the website of the agency, you have out of 9 provinces, you have 8 acting GMs in SASA, and one would like, because those are quite high positions in a regional environment, to have as acting all of them. So I would like to know if the appointments that have been made, the posts that have been filled, include those, please, especially towards the institutionalization of the grant payment next year. Thank you, Chair.
Department to answer.
Thank you, Chair. May we then start with the questions that are directed to the CFO with regards to the
316 million rand. After that, please, I would ask Mr. Brenton van Vrede, who is our DDG for Social Security Policy, to speak on deductions, at least the policy level and policy element of deductions, as well as Mr. Themba Motlou to speak on the actual administration and payment of grants and control of deductions. Over to you, Mr. Chubb.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. The 316 million, it's linked to a very important project for the country, and this amount spent, it was a very necessary project that needed to be undertaken by the country. If you were to look at the amount of money that is spent within the social assistance environment, it becomes very important. And when you look at the spin-off in terms of the SASSA's approach to do a re-registration project, it became a very material issue to deal with, because in excess of about 2 billion rand was saved through this project, where you had actually almost about 850 of the people that were already on the grant system that were taken off from the system. And when you look at the variation that needed to be employed and taken by the department or by SASSA just to be able to conclude that project successfully, one can understand that there were benefits relating to this. There was no doubt about it. And this is what has led to Treasury. When we approached National Treasury and we said, there is an amount of 316, which is irregular, we ask you to condone this amount. And on the 6th of June, 2016, we did receive a condonation of this amount. And what informed Treasury at the time was the basis on the benefits, and that this amount was never used in vain. It was part of the project. We need to understand that the variation was also necessary, because if you have an existing service provider and you want to do work within the area of that service provider, the only way to deal with it was to consider a variation, and CPS had to be given a variation for that amount. The second part that actually Treasury has raised, and we did receive a letter of withdrawal, which was the 2nd of August, and I just want to clarify that part without getting into the merits and the demerits of the issues of the court case, which will be dealt with later. And once the outcome of the court is actually given, we'll come back actually to brief in detail the committee to understand how the whole process actually unfolded. Treasury raised three things in the letter that we have received. I'm not going to be able to respond to what is speculated by the media. I will respond to what we have received as an agency, as an informal communication from Treasury. Treasury raised three issues with us. One was that in us requesting for a condemnation, we did not necessarily disclose this transaction as irregular expenditure in the financial statements. And we know that SASSA did disclose this irregular as a possible irregular expenditure in the years 2014-2015. An irregular expenditure transaction could only be disclosed after we've got a verdict from National Treasury. We received the verdict from National Treasury in September 2015. And if we have received the verdict from National Treasury, there was no way that we would have disclosed it except in the year in which we received the verdict, which was 2015-16. The second part which National Treasury has raised with us had to do with that we did not attach a management letter or an audit report together with the condemnation. We understand that at the time when we requested a condemnation, the audit process for the year 2015-2016 was not concluded, and there was no way in which the agency could have attached an audit or a management letter for a period in which the Auditor General has not issued a management letter or has not issued an audit report form. And therefore, it would not have been proper for us actually to attach. There was nothing to attach, because the audit report and the final management letter for the agency was only issued on the 29th of July 2016. And the condemnation was requested long before the end of the financial year. The third area that National Treasury in their letter they spoke about, they said we did not necessarily provide progress on the court case between ourselves and Corruption Watch. It's the details that National Treasury did not necessarily actually ask us for. We have not received any letter from National Treasury at the time requesting us for any additional information or requesting us to provide any additional information to the letter that we have written to them for condemnation. Subsequent to this matter, we did write back to National Treasury and provided all the information that they required for. So they still have to consider that transaction, and they will guide in terms of the way forward. And for us as an organization, as SASA, we believe that we have satisfied the requirements in terms of the National Treasury. However, the decisions and the processing of the transaction further will be guided by National Treasury and the outcome of National Treasury in that regard. And the whole issue of whether this transaction benefited the country, yes, it was a very important transaction to be undertaken during the period under review. However, the merits and the demerits of this matter actually would be argued and presented within the court when actually Corruption Watch and ourselves will be presenting our cases in that regard. And once it's done, we can be able to come back to brief the committee fully. And that's what my request would be to say for the committee to allow us to really go and present ourselves before the court. And once the courts have made a ruling on this matter, we can come back and brief the committee accordingly and get into the details of it.
Yeah, the process is that acting DG, you still have to finish all the questions and you deploy your delegation according to their expertise. It's up to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. However, we do have an appeal, and we plead as the National Department of Social Development with our agency here, SASA, around this matter, an issue of $316 million. The country charged us with the responsibility of designing a system that was going to eliminate fraud. Under the circumstances of the award of the contract, both the department and the agency did the best, the utmost best it could ever do under the circumstances. What here is at issue is not whether there was work undertaken. It's not whether there was a need for that work. What we can thoroughly and be blamed for is poor contract management. If you look at our SASA annual reports, particularly on the financials, we were celebrating in South Africa when we eliminated fraudulent social grant reception in the country, where we had people, as Honourable Member indicated earlier, who were applying for children that did not exist. And the process that here we are talking about is a process that ensured that children's biometrics were matched to those of social grant recipients, and therefore eliminating the problem and challenge of fraud. Now, we can look at this thing in multiple different ways. But for us, as the agency and the department, one fact remains. We saved the country 2 billion rand, which, if you look over a number of years, if those grants were to continue to be received, would have placed us as a country in a much more dire situation than the case here. What is under dispute here? Is not the work that was undertaken. What is under dispute is the contract process. And now, the latest withdrawal of the condemnation by National Treasury on this matter. But as SASA and as the department, we are indeed satisfied that work was done. However, we were found wanting on the issue of contract management. So, through you, Madam Chair, we really would like to make this appeal to particularly those of you who exercise oversight over us. In this instance, we were attempting to do the best possible under the circumstances as SASA. Now, may I then continue, Chair, with Mr. Brenton van Vrede giving us on the issue of deductions and the policy initiatives that we are putting in place, and Mr. Motlo will then add on the element of how are we dealing with deductions through the complaints that were outlined by the members. Thank you, Chair.
No, that is not allowed. That is not allowed. No, if you do it through me, don't answer when I didn't appoint you. Okay, can you then respond? You've heard the question.
Yes, matter happened to be the following. The CEO then was dismissed. Because there was a court case that had been launched, not only against him, but against other persons within SASSA. Ma'am, that court case was eventually dismissed by the court through the lack of evidence that was provided. And therefore, the former CEO then brought in lawyers to the department to say that the manner in which his dismissal was handled by the organization, and this was a discussion not just with the CEO of SASSA, it also involved our political principles. An agreement was then reached that instead of a long, drawn-out court process, that was going to end up costing us more than the settlement that was at issue. We were at a point where we agreed on a settlement of the amount to the former CEO of SASSA. That's how this came about. The main reason, as I state, is that the court case could not stick and it was dismissed. That was the primary reason behind the settlement that was reached. Through you, Chair, may I then ask Mr. Brenton van Vrede to give us an outline of our policy initiatives eliminate the challenge and problem of deductions.
Thank you very much for the explanation, because I'm always saying you can't put everything a rationale for any information you give. But if a question is raised, you are then able to give more information on that particular situation. So this has clarified a number of people. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee. The last time we discussed the matter, or wanted to discuss the matter at the portfolio committee, it wasn't discussed because the matter is still before court. But maybe I can just give you an update of what happened. In terms of the policy and legislative stance, the Minister of Social Development published a regulation on the 6th of May.
And Honorable Toilet.
Chairperson, I wouldn't really necessarily want us as this portfolio committee to not to stick to the regulation and guides that we always get in Parliament. The issue that I'm raising is when the issue is sub judice, we all know that we are not supposed to discuss it as a portfolio committee. I wouldn't want us to really, Chairperson, set a trend as this committee that matters that are still before the other arm of government, and then we preempt on them. Let's really respect the separation of powers. In that way, Chairperson, the issue, if it's sub judice, we can't necessarily discuss it in the portfolio committee.
I was expecting the department to raise that issue, because Andifuni will defend. So why are you breaking your law?
First, Chair, may I admit, we did not see it as breaking the law. And also to take the committee into confidence. We are absolutely certain about the kind of policy initiatives that we have embarked on that are ready to shape and finally eliminate this challenge that we faced on social grants. Now,
in as much as there are matters that may be subject to care, as a department and the agency, we have the policy responsibility in this kind of area. We have, over a period, raised the important issue of the erosion of the value of social grants and therefore the undermining of our anti-poverty initiatives through illegal deductions and grants.
Okay.
So there is a policy perspective that we have adopted,
okay,
which may or may not be challenged by whoever in the courts. So I thought, Chair, not necessarily that we were violating,
okay,
intentionally the
that is withdrawn.
The what's the name? So we just thought that let's nonetheless inform you as to what it is that we're doing to eliminate this problem completely, whether there's a court case or no court case.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a minute. Chairperson, the policy issue is another thing. But as long as they do not get to the merits of the court, of the case, that's where my issue is. But the policy matter, they can outline it, that's not a problem. But I'm worried once they get to the merits of the case, will they really necessarily stand up for the questions that we are going to ask? Thank you.
I was saying I'm withdrawing that part of violating because they had not actually outlined what they are going to say,
mm-hmm,
in so far as the policy is concerned. Because in any way, the people want to hear whether these deductions, because in some areas are still continuing. So they would want to know if there is something that is being done. There are deductions that have been done and that are being challenged in court of law. Maybe their deductions are still continue. So what we want to do know is to whether this will be abated at some stage. What is the policy directive that you're dealing with?
Thanks, Chairperson. As I was explaining, on the 6th of May, the Minister published a regulation which effectively would have stopped all deductions except those that are allowed for in the regulations. That regulations were then challenged in court, and all I wanted to do was update the committee to say that the court case will be held or heard on Monday and Tuesday next week. And I don't think we can say anything further than that, given that we have to wait for the outcome of the court case on Monday and Tuesday. It will be heard on Monday and Tuesday. The outcome will probably be in a week or two after that. In the meantime, SASSA has put in place a recourse mechanism for those experiencing deductions. And that's basically to help people, because some of these deductions are authorized and some of them are not authorized. And unfortunately, until we can have an outcome to the court case, we have to deal with cases on an individual basis. So people can go to SASSA, they can bring the evidence that they've got authorized, etc. And SASSA will then assist them if they can show it hasn't been authorized by them, SASSA will assist them to get their money back. I'm not sure if Mr. McLaw wants to add more on how the recourse mechanism works.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Chairperson. Indeed, I think in addition to the recourse mechanism that we have, I think it's important just to inform the committee that there is a promise that we're dealing with. As we speak, we're able to refund about 10,000, a number of cases that were reported, which were found to be indeed of dispute. And we were able also to calculate the value of those to about 1 million if you take from May to July. So it really indicates that we're dealing with the matter. And we also have to indicate that we have about 5,000 cases that we are currently investigating with beneficiaries. And there's a time frame that we normally put so that we ease the pressure of the beneficiaries from, 24 hours to 48 hours, just to resolve all the cases. I think that's what I can report, Honorable Chairperson.
If
would be helpful if you stick to what you said in the committee, that you have a strategic communication that will reach everybody. But I think if the minister, you can run this maybe in a radio, what that those people who still get deductions should do ABC, even for a week. Because in some rural areas, I mean deep rural areas, people still have this deduction, but they can't produce this evidence because you go with your card, we are to papa, ufigimali saliwe, you don't know, you take what you have and you go. But I think they are the ones who are not where communication is easily. So to have a voice that talks about this, people listen to radios and other things, they will hear whether it's your cozy or whatever, to say, Ngingu minister, I'm saying this and this. If you, it happens to you, this is where you can go, or this is the number. So that strategic communication we had promised with us to inform us about, but I'm not requesting you to do so. I'm just reminding that we still await to see that happen. So that matter has been now done, Mama. So we can move forward, ne? The other member who asked. But we have not answered, Honorable Solet, Mama Sondi, who said some steal because they are hungry. They have nothing to do. Wimbombos and other things. I think you will be able to talk about stress relief or whatever.
The outstanding questions on our part, which the CFO will address, are still the one on SABNT that was asked, and then there's also the question on damaged SASSA vehicles, hired vehicles, this is, I'm sorry, not SASSA, and then the 1.1 million Migonzo cancelled, and then the 124% expenditure from the Eastern Cape, and then there is then the issue of filling of posts with regional offices with 8 acting directors, which will be taken by the SASSA CEO. Mr. Chauya, please, if you can take those questions as outlined.
Thank you very much, Acting Ndiji. On the matter relating to the 74 million irregular expenditure. This was a matter between SASSA and Nexus Forensic Services. And this matter was heard.
You, for recording purposes, come closer and for elevating your voice, please.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. The verdict, this matter was heard actually on the 9th of June 2016, and a judgment was handed down on the 21st of June 2016. And what was found at the time when the judgment was handed was that the award of this bid by SASSA was found to be inconsistent with the provisions of Section 217. Subsection 1 of the Constitution. And secondly, the judgment also indicated that the tender is not set aside, despite the fact that it was found to be inconsistent and to be found invalid, it was never set aside. However, as an agency, as I already indicated, that we did take precautions in terms of how do we really deal with whatever expenditure that is incurred and how do we prevent any further expenditure to be incurred in the contract. And the contract itself, it's coming to an end, and we have actually been communicating in terms of the winding off of the contract. The process to deal with the irregular expenditure will only unfold during the course of this year. As I have indicated, when did we know this is an irregular transaction? We would not have dealt with it in the previous year. It has to be dealt with now because now we know the position. So during this process, we'll have to really follow the due process. There are guidelines that we need to take and follow in handling the irregular expenditure, and we'll be able to really report back to the committee as we conclude on the matter. But we'll not have taken any action between the end of June, because we still need that actually legal department to advise on the way forward in relation to the matter that was before the court. And that's what the first part. The other question relates to the 4 million fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And this has to deal with the cars. And I need to really indicate the following. Yes, we do have a SASA fleet. We are taking precautions around it. If we look at what I've already presented previously in terms of the 455 cases, you will see that we are doing a lot of recoveries, and the bulk of those recoveries relate actually to the issues of the management of the fleet. But we also, if I can just tell you that between the period of 1st of April 2016 to date, we only had about 80 cases that relate to fruitless and irregular expenditure as an organization. And it has been really coming down after we've implemented the process that we've implementing. Is it necessary to have the high values? Yes, we have. If you have the number of staff that we have, which is 10,000 people that are across the country, and they need to go to the communities, the fleet that we have may not necessarily be able to be sufficient to be able to reach the stakeholders that we need to. And therefore, there's a need. But if you also look at the terrain that we're using, we're getting into the rural places and driving, you understand that you'll be able to get your chips, some of the road surfaces, the stone chips and other things, then some of these things are unavoidable rather than actually looking at what the person's driving habits are, because you have to get into the villages. And when you get into the villages, there are issues that relate to those kind of things. Are there any elements of staff negligence? Yes, there are. And when there are staff negligence, we're taking steps actually to recover and also to bring some sort of deterrent so that the staff must not continue to operate as a problem. Yes, there are instances where it is not a staff member that it's at fault. Just like I give an example. If you happen that you do not see that it's a pothole and you hit a pothole, you lose control and then you bump something, it's something that's unforeseen. It can happen. Or sometimes an animal can just cross the road unexpectedly and it happens at that level. Those kind of things, then the organization like SASA need to really absorb the losses in relation to that. Yes, is it alarming? Yes, it's an alarming. It's a big amount. Do we have plans to put it down? Yes, we have. We have to really make sure that every case gets finalized and dealt with in its own merit, and we'll be able to deal with it. The 1.1 million in relation to Migonzo, it is unfortunate that it happened. And it actually, in the whole implementation of this program, we have not necessarily had any other expenditure except now. And it was just an unfortunate that the event could not necessarily take place in the 11th hour because of other commitments which were material, and we could not necessarily go on. And yet the service providers that were procured through a process have already came to deliver part of the things that we wanted, just to deal with the marquees that actually are there. So if the person presented what you're looking for and the event did not necessarily take place because of the operational commitment that happened within the office of the ministry, then you'll have to really postpone that, but you need to honor those. But going forward, what do you do? You make sure that as and when you contract, you also give the clauses that you need to do that. To say, look, if ever then you are going to postponing, at what particular point you should be able to communicate with the service providers and have an agreement. It is not the first time that we have had postponement. We have done postponement, but in this instance, it was unfortunate that it was already at the time the service providers delivered the goods. But as many times, we avoid actually for the service providers actually to really bring any claims. And this was just an unfortunate. We're managing it, we are on top of it, and it will not happen when we look at how we're planning now. And we try to put in processes to make sure that it doesn't happen. But if it becomes unfortunate, we should be able to really account for it in that regard. The expenditure relating to the Eastern Cape, part of the Eastern Cape, it's one of the regions that we felt that we needed to improve actually the between Eastern Cape and KZN in terms of the access to the pay points, which is the project that we're dealing with, the good estate structure. So the 124%, it relates largely in terms of the infrastructure that we're putting in, which was once off, which was funded partly related from the retained surplus to improve the places where we are actually paying our grant beneficiary. And Western Cape was one of the regions that actually did more in terms of that. So if you go to that slide, you'll see that actually they've done more state structures than any other province. And in that instance, that influenced the spending trend within the Eastern Cape. In terms of the filling of the post, yes, the post that we're talking about here is a national picture in terms of the filling of the positions. That the positions that we're reporting on, they include those of the regions in that regard. We have had develop a recruitment plan, which we are implementing, and we are actually following to make sure that service delivery, it doesn't get to be affected. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
But let me note the concern on the issue of postponed activities. It cannot be condoned because that's really, really wasteful one in the true sense. If it happens that the minister is not going to be available, there are thousands, hundreds of people there that can go and officiate in the place of the minister. You've got mayors, you've got portfolio committees at provincial, at national, but at no stage would you really go for 400. I'm making an example. For that matter, I'm making exaggeration to express the point. If the tent, the marquee, was 500,000, do you really pay that person when the marquee was not used? I think we have to be very, very, very serious on that. I hope, Acting DG, in future we will not hear the story of an activity that was going to take place. It's not only about the logistics. It's also about individuals that were going to attend there, who had to change their own plans, let alone the high hopes that I will be addressed by the minister. 1, 2, 3, the minister cannot come. I think we have to dissuade from being able to do that. That one, the portfolio committee cannot condone and must actually say it must not happen again. The preparation should be before you do procurement and you raise the hopes of our own poor people that at least I've got a chance to see the minister to express my feelings of being so much marginalized. 1, 2, 3, you are not even informed. Somebody comes and says, no, outside you work on a lab. I say, no decency to go and to say, No, Mama, this is what is going to happen, and this is the contingency plan. So we must avoid making our own offices more important than our clientele. Thank you.
Thanks. Just to add on the issue of the filling of posts, there was consensus that there's acting people in the different regions. I just want to point that the regions that are vacant currently is Limpopo and Northern Cape. Northern Cape, the recruitment process started and the submission was made to Cabinet and there were issues that were raised and we had to revert back to recommended people to clarify the issues so that we can come back. Unfortunately, the period has lapsed, so we may have to be forced to re-advertise that post. The Western Cape will be vacant effective, has been vacant, will be vacant effective from 1st of October. So making the regions that are vacant with vacant regional executive managers to be 3, which will be Western Cape, Limpopo and Northern Cape. The other regions where you saw people acting, there are people that have been appointed. And because we cannot secure additional compensation of funds to prepare for the new payment services, we've had to request some of the REMs to come and assist on this new process. And once they have completed the preparatory work, they'll be reverting back to their positions.
So it's not people that, it's not that there's no people there, it's just that the people have, are assisting in other areas.
There is a question Mama Whip wanted to ask on human resource.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I want SASSA to look at page 63 because I was listening to you on page 8. We have 95% of funded vacant positions filled. And when you look at this page where they speak on HR, they say there's a vacancy rate of 50%. And then the footnote attached is, although SASSA has a total of 19,988 approved posts on the establishment, only that amount was filled, 8,776 posts were permanent, funded posts filled, and critical posts, which you spoke to now. Of the permanent funded posts were filled, representing a 4% vacancy. And I would like to know, because this is for the whole of SASSA, the whole of South Africa, how are you going to reduce this vacancy rate? Because SASSA plays a very important role in disbursing funds to our people on the ground for grants to alleviate poverty. Thank you.
Can I? The staff establishment
for SASSA was never fully funded. It has always been, we've always been funded half of the post. So we only have funding for 8,776 posts. So what we have been doing is that every time there's a saving, we take money and go and request Treasury to create money to appoint at the local office level because our work requires people. Right now we have situations where at some of the service points, people have to move from local offices to go and serve other offices. So you find that you're robbing Peter to pay Paul in order to ensure that there's a spread of service delivery. In as much as you have improved footprint, you don't have staff physically there. So whenever we get saving or we have a high-level post, we break it down into smaller posts and fund the lower level so that we can have more footprint because we don't have any additional money that's coming from Treasury to do the compensation of employees. There was a year where the committee recommended that, why don't you abolish all this unfunded post because it gives a wrong impression in terms of the vacancy rate. Well, that's why we are indicating that in terms of the actual vacancy rate of funded posts, it's only 4%. Why we chose to not cancel them is because we know that we want to increase staff incrementally over the years. So as we get the money, whenever we get a saving, we go and make a motivation to increase that. We also had a plan to understand that we are going into the payment area. So if you abolish, the process of re-establishing would take longer and make it more problematic for us to establish. So right now we are putting motivation for payment staff, but because already you have an organogram and a staff establishment, therefore the process of feeding is not as complicated. But in terms of the eyes of into the public, for now we look bad, but it's going to save us particularly as we go into next year and the outer year for payment system.
Have you been able to identify, I won't blame you for not doing it, the issue of the other aids, like granting aid and others, that it has become very bureaucratic to access, especially with acting DG rural communities, because it is not clear. Those who serve those people are not clear whether they should be sent to a doctor to say they have difficulty in managing themselves and need a granting aid. It's not clear, not at all. People are given different responses by our offices to begin to say, why is your son not looking after you, and so on and so on. Now, the issue of qualifying to that particular grant,
because as much as we saw in your annual report, that so much has been done, I can argue it has happened in urban areas. Because you have to know about it, you have to know how you qualify for it, as much as the issue of distress relief. I don't know whether it is at a very local level where you interact with the person that must give you. And I think you could elevate this decision of no to a higher level. I'm raising this there. It's not a concern, but it's a matter that I bring your attention to. That it, we see how much you have been able to deliver on that target, but we know that the actual target where a person is all by himself in a rural area can't fetch water, can't do anything from the river or collect wood, and there's no electricity. You have a right, you might not know all the corners. See, Chabantu be Matabantu. Tina, we are not to account who said so. Ours is to say the people are saying. So I'm saying the people are saying, so then we will check where these people are, then you can do that work. I think, but in delivering that area, it is very high, very good, but I don't think it reaches the very needy. I wanted to make that note, but I was told Honorable Max was having a hand up. I acknowledge you. Are we going to have food? Also, also we must wind up. No, I'm being questioned by the technical support. You can't have food when it's a half day. So it will be fruitless expenditure. I abide with that. So I'm winding, therefore, because I think we have exhausted indeed. Mama Wilson?
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple basic figures related. They're all based on page 96 and 97 of the annual report. Under the notes to the annual financial statements. On page 96, loss on sale of property, plant and equipment that jumped from 8 million to 17 million. It's extremely high. What are we losing? And why are we losing on property sales? In this day and age, you're not supposed to lose anything on property. And then on page 97, can we have an idea of what the housing benefits and allowances are and who they go to? Who we are entertaining to the tune of 24 million. The medical expenses of 86 million. I'm always cautious when I see something that says other administrative expenses. And lastly, please explain to me the 21 million spent on health and wellness expenses and what the resettlement costs are for. Thank you.
Before, without necessarily playing my role as a chair, is to state that at times the people we entertain and want to be entertained include our elders. When they go to the minister, whatever arrangement, round tables with them, as much as when they go to Golden Games, and when they have to interface with the minister, I think that one, if it's not done, it must be done, because our people are senior citizens who really need to be in the corridors of power at times and feel that they are really cared for. I am not saying you will respond in that regard, but as where I'm seated, I think it must happen. If it doesn't, you can answer to that question.
Thank you, Chair. As for the financials and what they mean and why the increases are there, I will happily hand over to Mr. Chauke, our CFO. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, let me start with the first question that relates to note number 15. I think you will realize what the heading there is saying. It talks about the
the operating surplus, which has to do with the operating lease. So it is an adjustment relating to the GAAP standard, which is the financial accounting, which is the smoothing of the leases. And then when you get into a lease contract, there are properties that you lease over a particular period, and you do make improvements on those properties, and you find that the term in which you have entered into that lease agreement, actually it's for a short term at the time of that. So obviously over that period, you were supposed to capitalize that expenditure over a long period. So if then you have made some other improvements at the time towards the end of the lease agreement, then you need to actually to restate some of them. So it is not actually the properties that are owned by the agency where you're selling them. The agency only owns properties only in one province, actually, that's Limpopo province, and we still owe them. But this has to do with the leasing expenditure, which is an accounting the term that we're dealing with. Under the personnel, we spoke about the housing benefits and allowances. We do know that the officials that are appointed, actually, they have a housing allowance that you get. You get 1,200 if you are an official and then you have your own accommodation. You're given 1,200 as part of the package for the level 1 to level 10, so they qualify, all of them. And government has already made a determination that that amount which you are allowing officials to get, in the event that they don't own any house or they are not in any allowance or any housing arrangement, the agency must keep that money and we must pay it over to a new housing body that is dealt with primarily for the housing allowances. So that amount actually gets to be paid at the end of the period. But in this instance, then we do pay our officials the housing allowances and benefits, and that's they're entitled to that.
Their union will actually take it up with you, because I do know even poorest local municipalities, they allow their employees to have a renting allowance if they are not entitled to a housing allowance. So I don't think we can sit here and decide otherwise about the working class. But at the end, I think we have arrived at the end of our meeting. I do want to express our...
Point of order, Chair, sorry. He's still working through the financials. There were five items. I'm waiting for the other four, Chair.
Okay.
That was in the same question, Chair.
Oh, I'll give you.
And obviously we're going to close with the institutionalization. Thank you.
It's okay. Those questions can be dealt with. I'm very generous because I think we should be at a stage where, frankly, we want the department to be interrogated and to be allowed in a situation to tell their story thoroughly. Please bear with me. Can you answer those questions that have been put forward by the Honourable Member?
I think the Honourable Member is seeking further answers to questions that she raised, which the CFO may have overlooked. There's one on entertainment, for instance, as an example, and medical expenses.
Honourable Member, for your mic, so that they can
thank
hear you properly.
Thank you, Chairperson. It was entertainment, medical expenses, resettlement costs, and health and welfare, health and wellness expenses. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. The other ones that we deal with, the health and welfare expenses, this relates to the wellness of the officials. We do understand that as and when you're working, there are issues relating to the wellness issues, which you have to refer your officials for counseling and other things that happens within the organization as and when we're dealing with it. And that will also include where you have to deal with other matters that have to do with health-related issues, that we have to have a third party that need to really assist your officials to come to that. And this is a contracted element. So every particular period, we go out on tender, we ask
and a service provider. Currently, we contract that to ICAS. That actually helps the officials that in a case, whether they burn out or whatever they're happening about health issues, they must call the toll-free. They get the counselor, someone to stand in for them. And that is what we need to do. So that expenditure is related to supporting the whole country, which is the 10,000 people. That resettlement cost has to do with where we have appointed a person in terms of the policy that it's outside the 60-kilometer radius, and this person has to move from one area to another area. And we do pay that resettlement cost, which is a central cost based on the policy. So if a person in the Western Cape gets appointed in the Eastern Cape, then that person needs to relocate and find a place to stay and relocate with everything. So we need to really resettle that person, and that's where the resettlement cost comes into. And the medical expenses that we're dealing with it here is whole issues relating to us as an employer that allows that the contracted service providers that really assist us in relation to the doctors, and then we at least be able to pay them from that and to deal with those to support the operations of the organization. And remember that actual part of it is that you have the service providers that's related to the assessment of the beneficiaries, but you also have the contracts that also do some sort of review processes around that space, and that's what you need to pay for. The entertainment is not necessarily really only the entertainment that relates to the senior management, but here it's the entertainment relating to the normal operations in the office, because you're dealing with all the stakeholders that you're dealing with, the indunas, the chiefs, and whatever. As and when you do those stakeholders engagement, you should be able to provide your normal tea and whatever that you need to do just to be able to really deal with it. Remember that also there are also the ICROPs. Remember the ICROPs. There are the big ICROPs and the small ICROPs where you're doing work and community engagement that you need to do. So the 24 million has to do with the sales delivery. When we have a district going to see a particular community, we'll be able to really see how long we'll be able to engage with that community. And at that particular point, you could be jumped some few things that are refreshments that you need to provide. And it's linked to those kind of arrangements that you need to do. Understanding the clientele that we're dealing with. We're dealing with the frail.
Please allow the chair to help you in this one. This question is being asked by Mrs. Wilson, and therefore I request that we agree, honorable member, that they will give you a breakdown when we meet. Just even if it's one province, to say this entertainment, is it entertainment that we're talking about? We were able to spend in this fashion. Because now if it's about food, what it means, then we have a one scenario to say this is what happened in Northern Cape, so that at least you can work from that from that sample, and then estimate as to if you mentioned, you said about 74 microns or I-62, ICROP, and services out there. So I think it will, for the honorable member to be satisfied in interrogating what goes into that 24 million, I think you will need to do that. And then we can go to other questions. I really request the honorable member to settle, because we are dealing here in the annual report with the past, what has taken place over the years, the months and months. We are also with current, what are we doing now, because there's not going to be a stoppage anyway. And then how do we portray ourselves going forward, which means if there is too much that is being used in that, we'll discuss based on facts that will be put in front of us. And so I think that question must be dealt with that, in that arrangement. And then
please go to other questions so that the honorable member can actually utilize her time as a member of this committee. Thank you.
No, we're just waiting for the discussion on the institutionalization of the grants, Chair. If I may ask one question, am I correct in saying the CEO of SASAS is a contract position? How many years? Thank you.
What do you want us to engage on now?
We said that at the end we would have a brief breakdown of the institutionalization of SASA's ability to take over the grants.
That's a honorable member. You remember I gave you this paper to the agenda that we are going to adopt. An agenda that says, let me read it.
Point of order. We said we wouldn't discuss it in detail, but at the end we would have a quick brief on it, Chair.
Okay, you can go on that. You can do that.
Thank you very much, Chair. We'll be as to the point as we can be, with the full understanding that an arrangement where a full report and a full presentation and discussion on where we are as SASA on the matter will be then organized and held in the near future. Chair, before we start giving the highlights of this matter and issue, I just want to highlight the fact that as the Department of Social Development and SASA, we are fully aware of the huge responsibility that we are carrying in terms of ensuring that social grants for the plus or minus 17 million South Africans are indeed paid on time, as has been the established practice in the 5 or so years since this has been in effect. So we are at this stage doing everything possible to make sure that come the end of March 2017, there is no South African that will not receive their rightful grant as per our processes and systems of SASA. So in other words, we have not taken the eye off the ball. We are running everything under the circumstances to make sure that there is no whatsoever concern which may then put us in a position where we're unable to pay social grants. Our minister is fully aware of this. She is providing political leadership on the issue and the matter. Our deputy minister is fully aware of this. We are working with minister of advisors as well as the committee that was referred to earlier. Now, we have a project manager who's managing this project to make sure that come the end of March 2017, SASA would have made significant strides towards ensuring that social grants are paid internally by the organization. Allow me then to ask Ms. Zodwa Mvulane, who's our project manager, to give us, as we have already agreed, highlights of where we are. After she has given the presentation, allow us as well to get the CEO of SASA if he needs to make any further clarifications on the matter, including Mr. Zane Dango, who is a special advisor to the minister, because as we exit here with the brief highlight, we really want to provide you with the confidence that we are indeed somewhere, with the details having to follow at some point in the near future.
I don't think we're doing justice to ourselves because we have a plan. When you live here, we've got a program in front of us which starts in November this year, next month, where you are going to be called upon to come and do what you want to do here now, because this is an annual report. And we've dealt with quarterly reports, which have come to be consolidated in this annual report. Then, because once you start presenting to us, What we're going to do is to respond by questions and wanting you to explain further and further. I think I will be a little bit out of order, Honorable Member, because I passed this. I'm still correct to say we have an appointment with the department on the 11th of December, of November, this quarter, to deal with these matters. And they can't be in the quarterly report because this is work in progress. I appeal to members to really, really, when I look at the speakers to deal with the same matter, I tend not to want to agree to this process, Mama Masango. I'll allow you to speak.
Thank you, Chair, and I agree with you. The program that you've shown us is going to help a lot to go into detail. But what we're asking now for is a highlight, even if it's one person. All we want to know, are we ready to take over there, to institutionalize this? And if we are not, who, what, how, what are we going to do? And what processes are in place? And I'll tell you why, Chair, this question has to come about. It is in the annual report, but it also is fueled by the fact that we asked in June this year, what is the state of readiness of the department in SASSA, and we did not get the report. But in the answering of that question, it was mentioned that there is a work stream team that is working on this thing, and it has already started to implement this thing.
Yes.
All we are saying is, in the absence of the plan that we asked for, we would just like some highlights that say we are ready as the department in SASSA, we are not ready as the department in SASSA, and this is who is going to do the work, and the 17 million people can be rest assured that this thing is going to happen. That's all we're asking, Chair.
Okay. No, I'm not rigid, Honorable Member, but what I'm, nor do I want to stifle the debate, but I want to be clear with you that we are already informed that there are streams which actually Honorable Wilson spoke about, that they are in place and they are doing some work. So I don't know whether, if we are told that there is this work being done, do we want to get into detail what they are doing? Because I think I heard it that there are work streams. However, please, Acting DG, address us properly by not actually having any preamble to just state whether you are ready to stage, whether there's work in progress in the form of what, then the gist, we must go when we will be able to ask such questions. For me, it is not about being sub judice about what, it is about work in progress that we want to be taken on board fully on the date for that. Because indeed, if you write an annual report, you can say this is work in progress without necessarily detailing it, because it is a consolidation of four quarters. Then please assist me by just telling us if you I think at some stage I heard you saying you will be able to deliver at some stage as per your plan. So I wouldn't like us not to have a plan. The advisor, I can allow you to talk.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. If I may state this matter in this way, SASSA is a state agency, and when you look at the payment of grants, the primary platform that you require is an IT platform, information technology and communications. We need to have in place a system that very much approximates what we already have currently, so that the experience of paying social grants does not vary and remains continuous and constant. Having said that, you are fully aware that we're operating under a constitutional court prescripts as to the progress that has to be made in all these various and different areas. We would like to assure the committee that the constitutional court requirements continuously reporting to the court as to the progress we are making is, as we speak, fully up to date. We have informed the court accordingly as to the progress that we're making in these various different areas. Now, it is true as well that there are currently work streams that are under the leadership of different experts And it is really out of the work of those work streams, working in conjunction with the National Department of Social Development and SASA, to then construct a system that will, come the end of March 2017, be at an advanced stage, if not complete, come that period and time. Now, there are matters that would best be dealt in the detailed presentation that we are committing to at your service. At this stage and moment, in as much as we're an organization that is stepping into new terrain, we've never paid social grants before, we are confident that we shall not let South Africans down in any sort or kind of way. It's about getting the appropriate system, having that system tested and piloted, and we'll be ready to run with it without compromising the work of the agency and the work of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Let me thank you for all the efforts to try and give us the required information. I also would wish to ask the members of this portfolio committee that we have so much work to do, honorable members. And if you agree with the chair that we can add our own time in allowing the department to come over and brief us so that we are not left, there's no gap between what they are doing with us. Now it depends on your availability. I can always be on this chair and they will always be on that side to give us information. So I think next time we will focus more in our program on current issues that they have to do so that we are not left too much behind, so that when we come to an annual report, which includes the four quarters that we have been evaluating, we ask things that we might have not even asked during a particular quarter. So we will work, the more we do this work, there is more concrete experiential learning that tells us we must spend even our own time in order to be up to the same level with the department, because they are full-time there and we're not full-time here. So the time available to us and them is not really equal. So I thank you very much for your participation, and I feel encouraged that we are doing good work. The mere fact that time is up, and our questions are still there. Thank you very much. And I also thank you, the media, for covering this committee. We are less covered as this committee because our clientele is not and having a big influence, because they are not rich people. They don't contribute. They only take. But we are here to ensure that they are also recognized. Thank you, everybody, including our guests. Those who want to shake a hand with the chair, we can do that. Thank you very much.